Okay, good evening. We are looking at a discourse relating or taught on this week's parsha, Parsha Terumah, which is about the building of the sanctuary, the building of the Mishkan. And this discourse was said on the same Shabbat in 1986, Tavshin Mem Vav. And the discourse actually runs on a verse from Shir HaShirim, from Song of Songs. So let's first of all get the idea of the Parsha, what it's saying, a little bit, and then move into the Song of Songs, and then we'll look at the discourse. So the beginning of the Parsha, Yael, would you like to read and translate, maybe? Yeah.
Me? I could read, but I'm not sure I can translate. Okay. Let me just get my mouth full. Okay, by the Be'er Adonai El Moshe Lemor, and God spoke to Moses and said, דבר על בני ישראל ויקחו לתרומה מאת כל איש אשר ידבנו ליבו. Speak to Israel, the Israeli people, and they'll take a תרומה, a donation?
Yeah, offering. Yes, offering. It is a donation, in fact. Yeah.
From each person. And ידבנו ליבו, what would you say? אשר ידבנו ליבו.
Whose heart prompts him, you could say. It's like from the word nedava.
Yeah.
That his heart makes him want to give the nedava.
And you will take my offering.
Yeah.
וזאת התרומה אשר תקחו מאיתם, זהב וכסף ונחושת. And this is the offering you will take from them, gold, silver, and copper. ותכלת וארגמן ותולעת שני שני ושש גדודים.
These are like tchelet, blue wool, purple wool. Each one of these is a kind of wool, that semer,
yeah.
And it's dyed a color. So it's tchelet, blue, purple. Tolad shani is scarlet. Vashesh means linen. And izim and goat's skin. Anthony, do you want to continue? V'orot. You can say it in Ashkenaz.
Can I say it now?
Yeah.
V'orot elim ha'dovim. And skins of goats dyed red. V'orot tachashim. The skin of this animal called tachash.
Yeah.
But I'd say shittim. And I usually try to see the wood, but it seems to be acacia wood.
Right.
Some sort of wood. The shemen lamor and oil for the lighting. The somim incense for smelling.
Mm-hmm.
The somim.
Spice.
The shemen amishcha for the anointing oil. For the Keturis HaSamim and for the Keturis.
Yeah, for the incense. Yeah, spices for the incense.
Yeah. Want me to carry on?
Mm-hmm.
Havnei Shohan, an onyx stone. Vahavnei Meluim, and stones for the setting. La Ephod, for La Choshen. For the Ephod, which was the... an apron type thing.
Yes, right.
Well, Achoshen was the breastplate.
Yeah.
You know, where there were these 12 stones. But also the Mikdash, and you should make for me a holy place, a sanctuary. The Shachanti Besokom, and I will dwell among you. Bechol Hasheni, you want to carry on still?
Yeah.
Hasheni ani mare osko. According to all that I am showing you, Eis Tafnish HaMishkan, the plan of all the Mishkan, the Eis Tafnish Kol Kelov, and the plan of all the Kelim, all the vessels, the Chain Tasu, and that's how you should do it.
Right. And then it goes on with the making of the Aron. Va'asu Aron Atzeshitim. They should make an ark, which is made of cedar wood or acacia wood, and it gives its size, amotayim v'chetzi orko, 2.5 cubits long, v'ama v'chetzi rochbo, and 1.5 cubits wide, v'ama v'chetzi komato, and 1.5 cubits high. Right? So a cubit is about this sort of length, about 18 inches approximately. And so that gives us the idea of this ark, and it then tells us that it should be covered with gold inside and out, and that is where the tablets of the Ten Commandments are going to be put. So we have this amazing structure which is being described here, this formation of this prototype of the Mikdash, of the temple in Jerusalem. And it's an absolutely amazing thing that is being constructed. And the in Shir HaShirim, where the relationship between God and the Jewish people is described in terms of a love relationship between a man and a woman. So we have in verse 8, in chapter 8, so if you turn, the last page of the Hebrew texts is from Shir HaShirim. It's got a different style of being. No, just if you turn like that, you just like turn one more page, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So there, if we look at the beginning of chapter 8, which is about 2/3 of the way down the page, Mi yitencha ka'achli, if only you were like a brother to me. So the woman is saying to the man, if only you were like a brother, your next day imi, like me drinking from the breasts of our mother, emtza'acha b'chutz, I would find you outside, eshakcha, I would kiss you, my brother, hello, and gam lo yavuzuli, no one would be angry with me, no one would make fun of me that I'm kissing you in public, because you're my brother, it's all right, it's kosher, it's there's nothing, no one will raise their eyebrows. So the girl is saying to the boy, if only you were like my brother, that we could be seen in public together. And then it goes on, how I'll bring you to my mother's home, you'll teach me, I'll give you to drink wine, Ma'asis rimoni, the juice of my pomegranate. And so this very powerful image is an image of the closeness of the Jewish people to Hashem, achieved through the building of the Mikdash and through general aspects of Jewish life, as we're going to explore in the discourse. So it's at that point that we turn over the page and we come to the beginning of the discourse of the actual Maimah said by the Rebbe in 1986 on this week's Shabbat Parshat Truma. And in order to help us enter into the Maimah, there is the Maimah Nigun. Oh, ya, Hayiridam ba hayiridam ba yom bam ba yam ba yam bam 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 ba yam bam bam ba yam ha yam ba yam bam ba yam aho ya ya yom ba nam bam ba yam ba yom ba nam ba yam bam 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 aho yam ba yam ba ram ba yam ba yam ba ram ba bam bam ba ram ba ram ba bam bam ba yam ba ram ba yam bam 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 ba ram ba yam bam bam ha ye ri ram ba ha ye ri ram ba ho ram ba yam ba yam ba yam ba yam ba yam ba yam bam bam ba yam ba Mi yiten chaka achli yonek shdei imi. If only you were like a brother to me, drinking from the breasts of my mother. Im tzaach ubachutz hashat chavugomer, I would find you in the outside, in the street. I would kiss you. V'yadua hadrush al pasuk ze b'tor orish pashutin. It's known, the teaching on this verse, in the book called Torah Or by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the founder of Chabad, who lived at the beginning of the 19th century, passed away in 1812. Hainu bahatchalat hachasidish parsha. That means at the beginning of what's called the chasidish parsha. There's the parshat hashavua in the Torah, and there's the chasidic parsha hashavua, which is the way it is in Torah or and Likutei Torah, as said by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. And Ubechod Sheacholef, and in the month, it's two books, Likutei Torah or Likutei Torah, and in the months of the winter, they are the discourses in Torah or. Now, Ulefize, and since that book, when it comes on to this week's Parsha, it begins off with this verse from Song of Songs, Tzarich Lomar, we have to say, Sheyesh Lezeh Shaychut V'Kesher L'Parsha Tashavua. There is a connection to the Parshat HaShavua, Parshat Truma. The Nosef El HaKeshe B'Pashtut. There is, in addition to the obvious connection, HaMuvan Al Pi Marsha Mavar B'Fnim HaDrush, as explained in that discourse in Torah Or, where it's talking about Inyan HaKruvim. It talks about the two Kruvim, the cherubs, that were on top of the ark, which are explained in the Parsha. So in other words, the Chovim, see, it says in the Gemara as well, and in Midrash, and emphasized in Kabbalistic literature, that the Chovim, one is male and one is female. And the unity of the Kruvim together represent the unity of God with the Jewish people, and that was the central image in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies of the Temple and of the Mishkan. So therefore, this idea of Sheh HaShirim, of Song of Songs, this expression of love, that fits with the whole idea of the Kruvim. But in addition, Mistaber Lomer, one could suggest, says the Rebbe, Shegam Atchalat HaDchosh, and also the beginning of the discourse, HaPasuk Mi Yitencha, that very verse, Kashur in Parshat Truma, is itself connected with the chapter of Truma in general. Dehine Hemshech HaPasuk Hu, because the continuation of the verse is, Anhagcha Aviyachel Beit Imi, I will bring you into my mother's house. And that mother's house, what is that? The Koyel Beit HaMikdash. It's talking about the temple. So there's a sense in which we can read Sheh HaShirim that it's talking about the temple. Uchlal etochan pasuk, and the whole idea of the verse, Ka'i bezman shebeit hamikdash hayekayim, is talking about the time the temple stood. Shal zehi habakasha bezman hagalut. This is the request at the time of exile. Mi yitencha, if only you would be close to me as you should be, and as we should be close to each other, as we will be in the time of Mashiach, as we were at the time of the temple, rather than like now when we have to walk in the street and not acknowledge each other. We have to pretend to be strangers to each other. Where, and that is this atmosphere of exile. And that's how this verse connects with what it says in our parsha. They should make for me a temple, a sanctuary, and I will dwell among them or within them. Because in fact there is a comment, I think it starts with the Alshech, that the indwelling of the Shekhinah, of the Divine Presence, it's not just in the temple, it's also betoch kol echad v'achad, it's within every single individual. And that betocho, it doesn't say betocho, betoch ha-mishkan, it says betocham, betoch kol echad v'echad. And this is the tzivui al binyan ha-mishkan v'ha-mikdash, this is the command for building the sanctuary. So therefore we have this idea of this image of these two lovers who at the moment are estranged. They can't be together. And she's saying, if only at least we would be like brother and sister, that we could walk in the street together, we could be relaxed with each other, and no one would say anything about it, because at the moment it is a time of exile and they have to be separate, or they have to look separate. V'inyan hu, now the inyan is as follows. The hine inyan hashra'at hashchinah, the idea of the indwelling of the divine presence of the Shekhinah. Bizman shebet hamikdash hayakayim, at the time of the temple, the existence of the temple, haya kashur im inyan ha-Torah. It's connected with the whole idea of the Torah. Now, that is the way in which there is a sense in which this sort of romantic and, in a sense, you know, distant image with which he began suddenly becomes part of our lives as well. Because Torah is something that relates to us, and we are also able to learn Torah, and we're learning Torah the second. And so what it's saying now is that through Torah there is the dwelling, the indwelling of the Shekhinah. The Hashra'at HaShekhinah B'Mikdash, the dwelling of the Shekhinah in the temple, Hiala Aaron, is on the golden ark. As it says there, V'no'adeti lecha me'ala kaporet, I will meet you there, God says to Moshe, I will meet you there from on top of the cover of the Aaron. Sha'aron u'inyan la'Torah, and the ark represents Torah. Sha'arei ba'aron hayu monachim luchot habrit, in the ark were the tablets of the covenant. V'gam ha'sefer Torah haya monach ba'aron or b'tzad ha'aron, there was also a Torah scroll, either in the ark or on the side of the ark, as it says in the Gemara, two different opinions about that. So in other words, the ark has got the whole essence of Torah. It's got the Torah scroll, it's got the Ten Commandments, and that is where God meets with Moshe and God meets with the Jewish people. Now, so far, it's talking about the time of the temple, when the ark is there and the temple is there. And what's very typical of Hasidic teaching is that it's never content that there is some glorious thing at a particular time. If it happened once, it must be happening again, and it must be happening now, because everything good is eternal. So if there was a meeting with God through the concept of the Torah, so v'al derech zehu gam la'achrei shecharav beit hamikdash, similarly after the temple was destroyed, uchamavua behemshech ha'maima, as it explains as the discourse goes on, v'al derech zeh bedrushei rabotenu nesiyenu bedorot shel ha'achar zeh. And similarly, in the chain of discourses from Rabbi Shneur Zalman's time, who passed away in 1812, and then his son's discourses, and his grandson, and so on through the generations, the leaders of Chabad, each of them teaching these Kabbalistic discourses on similar themes. Shechelek mehem kvar nitpasu nitpasem, and quite a number of these teachings have been printed or have become known, and others not, because they're, at this point there were still many in manuscript. Kamaim Razal, as the sages say, Mishacharav, Mishacharev Beit HaMikdash, when the temple was destroyed, Ein lo laKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo, all God has in his world is Eile Dalad Amot Shel Halacha, the four cubits of Halacha. Now, that's a very striking statement, that when the temple was destroyed, God, all he has in the world is the four cubits of Halacha, the little patch of Halacha. And that can be taken in a kind of a negative way. And in fact, in the 13th century, there was an attack on the Jews from the Catholic Church, because a Jewish convert who had converted to Christianity told the church, oh, you know, the Talmud is very blasphemous. It says things like that. And this was one of the things he quoted. He quoted something like 30 passages from the Talmud. And how can you say God only has four cubits in the world? God is infinite. I mean, everyone had the same concept of God. So what does it mean that he only has this little patch of halacha? So it can be seen as, and of course, you know, you can explain what that means. In fact, the Rambam, in his introduction to the Pirush on the Mishnayot, which has been translated into English, called Introduction to the Talmud, he gives as an example, in order to show the significance of the Agadah, the story part of the Talmud. See, there's the halachic dimension and the story dimension. So the Rambam, in order to illustrate the significance of the story dimension, he takes this very statement that all that God has are the four cubits of halacha, and he explains that in a way which I remember as being very interesting, and I can't remember the details this minute, but it's and what in Hasidic teaching we often have is the idea that when a person is studying halacha, they're actually uniting with Hashem. In fact, any Torah, but it's particularly clear with halacha. You're studying, a person is studying some practical application of Torah, like Hilchot Shabbat, something like that. So their mind at that moment is grappling with and is trying to grasp an idea, a halachic idea, which is the will of Hashem. And so that idea is embraced, like the mind is embracing the idea, and the idea is embracing the mind. And so within that idea of halacha is a spark of godliness. So it means that the mind and godliness are coming together in a very intimate way, and within the mind ultimately is the divine soul of the person. So by studying Torah, we are actually bonding with God in an incredible way. So when it says that Hashem only has the four cubits of halacha, it's really telling us a positive way that we can bond with God at any time. Just by thinking or studying some little bit of Torah, we're immediately able to have a sense of bonding with God, that certain sense in which the idea that in the temple, okay, so you have to come to the temple and it's very difficult, as it were, everyone has to be pure in the right way, and you come to the temple, but there's a sense which, when the temple was destroyed, here is the Shekhinah in the Torah in general, which everyone is able to study. So there we have, Shemizem Muvan, from this it's understood Gamken, also, Sheinyan Ashraat HaShekhinah Shebemikdash, the idea of the indwelling of the Divine Presence in the temple, Kashur Iminyan HaTorah, is connected with the Torah, the Dalad Amot Shel Halacha, the four cubits of Halacha, K'mavu B'Hemshech HaDrush, as explained there in the continuation of that discourse in Torah, or Ubaruka B'Tanya Sof Chelek Rishon, and especially in Tanya, at the end of the first section of Tanya. Because there it talks about the way there is an indwelling of God in the temple in an incredible way, in the way that the temple is like the mind of the world. And when the temple is there, it's as if in some subtle way the world is conscious. And that's the That's the redemptive sense when the temple is there. But then when the temple is destroyed, then it is a then it's a kind of an unconsciousness. Hello, how are you? That's lovely seeing you. Let me give you that. Oh, that's wonderful. Here we are. We'll just do it. But then when the temple is destroyed, it's like a concealment of that consciousness. So this is what the Jewish people are asking, this Mana Galut at the time of exile. Mi yitencha ke'achli, if only you would be like my brother, they say to God. Aviyachol beitimi, I will draw you and your presence into the house of my mother, into the temple. And what does it mean, my mother? Imi zoto hashebal peh. My mother means the oral Torah. There's the written Torah, which is like my father, the male, and there's the oral Torah, which is like the female. That there should be the indwelling of the divine presence in the four cubits of halacha, which emerge from the discussions in the oral Torah in the Talmud, because it's the Talmud, the Mishnah, the Talmud, and ultimately the Shulchan Aruch take the ideas which are there in the written Torah and transform them into teachings which we are able to follow as halacha. So this has taken this sort of intense, intimate, yearning quality from the Song of Songs, which on the one hand can be understood as a yearning for the temple, because the woman is saying to the man, if only we could be together in a free way, whereas now we're not together, and the reason we're not together is because it's a time of exile, and so it's an expression of yearning for the building of the temple. On the other hand, it is a yearning to be close with God in a way which is very accessible at any moment. The idea of study of Torah, that in Torah itself there is that closeness and intimacy with the divine. Okay, any comments that anyone would like to?
There's a mention in the, I think it's in one of the tefillah in the morning, that because there's no Beit HaMikdash, there's no temple, our language, our words, are really the ones that we have to pay service to.
Uneshalma farim svatenu. That's right.
So it's kind of like, as if that's become... it's like instead of that, because of that, we have that's got to be.
We've got that power. That power is granted to us. Without the temple being there, because the temple's not there, we're granted another power. That when we say the words relating, Kol halomet Torat Ola ki'ilu hikriv Ola. Anyone who studies the teachings in the Torah about an offering, it's as if they brought the offering in the temple. And from the tefillah, we will pay for bulls which we would have offered in the temple with our lips by speech. So neshalma farim svatenu. So that idea of our words and the tremendous power that words have, the spiritual power, that these are words which, if we remember the famous letter of the Baal Shem Tov, where he speaks about every letter, having every Hebrew letter, having in it olamot, neshamot, ve'elokut, worlds and souls and godliness. And then the letters join together and become a word. And then the words themselves connect together. And they're all moving upwards towards God. And we should include our own soul with that process of movement towards God. So the letters and the words and the teachings and the ideas of Torah are something that have within them the infinite radiance of godliness that we are able to connect with. you see, a person might be sensitive to this radiant spirituality in the world. But even if not, the fact that he or she is taking the idea, the spiritual idea, into their mind, that itself is a spiritual interaction with God. Even if they don't realize that. There are interactions that a person doesn't realize. You know, like we eat something, and so eating has a tremendous effect on our body. And we may be conscious of it, we may not be conscious of it. But the fact that learning Torah has a spiritual effect on the person and the whole nature of the person's being. Okay. So the bottom paragraph of this first page. V'hine, and behold, inyan dalad amot shel halacha b'pashgut, the idea of the four cubits of halacha in simple terms. Ba al yedei yegiyat v'limud ha'adam halomed. It comes through the effort and the study of the person who's studying. Shalomed, he's learning in such a way, la'asuk hishmaitza alibe dehilchasa. That's a saying in Aramaic, which means that his study of the halachic portion, he's reading something in the Talmud, and he's trying to understand it. Now, the Talmud's a very subtle text, and not necessarily the way that he understands it is really the way which leads towards the halacha, as it's decided by the great sages, the Rambam, the Rosh, the Rif, and ultimately the Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. And so a person could learn in such a way that doesn't really get to the halacha. And in fact, most people in yeshiva, when they study, are not thinking about the halacha at all. That's not the way people study. That would be too limiting in a way. Because what they have to do when they're studying Talmud with Rashi's commentary and Tosafot, for the most part at a more elementary level, that means 14, 15, 16 years old, they are learning the pathways of the Talmud without necessarily thinking about what the final halakha is. The final halakha is a topic for a further dimension of study later on. They don't study straight from the Gemara, they study from the Shulchan Aruch. They may learn the Gemara in preparation for learning that part of the Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Law. But it's a different dimension of study, trying to understand the sheer practical application. But the Talmud, in its theoretical level, it's a most wonderful landscape with many different features, only some of which relate directly to halacha. But when a real Torah scholar, Torah sage, is studying, a real Torah scholar, let's say, even before a sage, but just at a higher, more advanced level, then his concern is, with all these different intricacies of the Talmud, he wants to see what is the halachic effect of these teachings. And so therefore his goal is la'asuk hishmaitza alibe dehilchasa, that he should be learning in such a way that it comes out according to the halacha. Ki hagam deleka midi delo remiza b'oraisa. Even though there's a principle that there is nothing which is not hinted at in the Torah, and that means in the written Torah, the Torah shebiksav, every single halakha, every single detail of law, in some way we can find in the written Torah. Even if it's a later gezeirah or something else, there are nonetheless hints throughout the Torah. Mikol makom, nonetheless, tzarich liyot hayegiyah, there still needs to be the effort, lahasika halakha lemaisa, to get out, to extract the halakha for practical terms, mitorah shebal peh, from the oral Torah, sheyesh b'zeh ribui gadol, and it's an enormous realm, the whole of the oral Torah. It's this fascinating realm. It's an enormous realm. Kamosh katov, as it's written, Shishim Hema Melachot. There are 60 queens. You have a king, and you have 60 queens. Who are the queens? Shehem Shishim Masechtot. They are the 60 tractates. Because in the Mishnah, there are 60 tractates. Ushmonim Pelagshim. And 80 handmaidens. So there are 60 queens, 60 wives. And 80 concubines. Right? So there are wives and concubines. So the wives are the Masechtot, the actual tractates, and the concubines, Elu Braitot. They are extra teachings. You see, when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi compiled the Mishnah, he took certain teachings and he left out others. So the ones that are called left out, they are Braita. Braita means outside. So they were left out. So they represent the 80 concubines. So the 60 queens, 80 concubines. Va'alamot ein mispar, and no end to young girls. This is like King Solomon, or someone like that. Yeah, King Solomon had, what was it? 700 wives and 300 concubines, or maybe the other way around, I can't remember. But he had 1,000 wives altogether. So here we have this image, 60 wives, okay, it's only 60 queens, 80 concubines, and alamot, and these numberless young, beautiful women, elu meimrot ha'amorayim shebashas. They are the teachings of the Amorayim, of the sages of the Gemara. So in other words, the whole Gemara has this feminine quality of the wives of the king, the Melech, represented by God and Torah Shebiktav, the written Torah. Umikol zeh, and from all this vast territory, tzarich liot hasakat hasugya, we have to be able to extract the teaching, lefi halacha, according to the halacha. Because you can swim around. It's called the Yam Shel HaTalmud, the Sea of the Talmud. You can swim this way, you can swim that way. You can find all kinds of striking statements in the Talmud. You know, which may or may not have a form of practical application. For example, the Talmud says, if a person wants to do an Avera, they want to transgress, they should put on black clothes and go to a place where no one knows them. ... Now, so if someone did this, you know, he might get his name in the news of the world. He'd say, I'm just doing what the Talmud told me. But but that's the thing, you know, how do you apply that particular teaching in the Talmud? And many other teachings. How do you put it all together? So that's what it means, getting the teaching according to the halacha. Shezeu inyan hayegiyah b'torah. That's the effort of the Torah. Inyan yonek shteimi, the idea of suckling from the mother, drinking the mother's milk. Da'al yedei hayegiyah k'dabai, if there's the right kind of effort. Magiyah psak halacha. You really reach the right kind, the right decision of halacha, because in fact it's not an open territory that you can say anything. It has within it an internal structure of rules, of what is the halacha and what isn't the halacha and how to understand it. And it's fascinating when you look at Rambam, other poskim who decide the halacha, and it's all moving within certain structure. They have a latitude. Are they going to paskin like this one or like that one? But it's very, very striking how clear the structure of the halacha is to the real scholar of Talmud. To the person who's only studying Talmud in a superficial way, it can seem, you know, well, maybe this, maybe that. But if they are studying in a deeper way, the inner structure of the Talmud becomes clear, and they are able to have a clearer picture of the whole nature of the thought of the halacha. And what does that mean? Shenaseva havaya imo shahalacha kamoto. All this is a reference to a passage in the Talmud that God is with him because he has achieved such a situation. Maybe it's the other way around. Because God is with him, the halakha follows his view. So in other words, this is a Torah scholar. There are many Torah scholars in the Talmud itself, but there are only certain of them of whom you could say that the halakha is always like them, or almost always like them. And so this concept of studying Torah in such a way that one actually has a grasp of the halakha, that is an expression of something divine taking place with them, in them. Haynu hashchat hashchinah. It means the indwelling of the divine presence of the Shekhinah, kamo b'mikdash, as happened in the temple, dichtiv, as it says, when o'adati lecha sham, God says to Moshe, I will meet you there at the lid between the kruvim of the golden ark. Alright, so that's a stunning image of the spiritual power of Torah learning, right? And you can just imagine a person who, you know, there's some people who spend all their time learning Torah. What an amazing accolade they've just been given by this teaching, which is telling them that they are in fact achieving the most tremendous intimacy with the divine through their study of Torah. Okay. Omnam, however, Yesh Baalei Asakim. There are business people. There are business people who run businesses or work in businesses. She'ika iskam, and their main activity eino b'halacha shebetorah, is not studying the laws of the Torah. They do it a bit, but their main activity is something else. Uchanoda, as is known, sheyesh b'Yisrael marei oraita, there are among the Jewish people masters of Torah, talmidei chachamim, scholars, sages, umarei uvdin tavin, and masters of good deeds, ba'alei asakim, who are business people. Ubichlalut hu ahefresh, and in general, it's the difference between Yisachar and Zvulun. The difference between the two tribes, Yisachar and Zvulun, that Yisachar were known as Torah scholars and Zvulun were known as businessmen who had ships traveling from Haifa Bay, I think it was, beautiful natural harbor, sailing round the Mediterranean and other places and bringing lots of business to Israel, and with the money they supported their brothers Yisachar, who became famous scholars, particularly knowledgeable about the intricacies of Kiddush HaChodesh, of sanctifying the new moon, which is a complicated astronomical procedure, especially since tonight is Rosh Chodesh. Yechtiv, as it says, Smach Zvulun B'tzeitecha, rejoice Zvulun with your going out in the ships, B'Yisacha B'O'alecha, and Yisacha in your tents. Yisachar haya b'olah shel Torah, because Yisachar were in the tents of Torah. Val derech zeh, and similarly with the ba'avodat kol Yisrael, with the service of the whole Jewish people, sheyesh ma'arei Torah shehim b'olah shel Torah. There are masters of Torah who are in the tent of Torah. B'dalad amot shel halacha, they are in the four cubits of Jewish law. Oh, says the Rebbe, or b'dalad amot shel tefillah, in the four cubits of prayer. A person might spend the whole day studying Torah, or they might spend a long time, maybe almost the whole day, praying as well. K'mavur b'adrush, as it says there in Torah. So that was Yisachar. Uzvulun haye yotze lachutz, whereas Zvulun would go to the outside, sailing across the sea, traveling, La'asok b'falkamatya, in order to be busy with business. But Alderach said, similarly, having used this kind of biblical image of Yisachar and Zvulun, now coming to our present day, Heim ba'alei asakim u'marei uvdin tavin, they are the business people, the masters of good deeds, hanim sa'im michutz l'dalad amot shel halacha, they are found outside the four cubits of halacha, outside Dalad Amot Shel Tefillah, they're outside the four cubits of prayer. And that's what this verse is about. This is a very, very beautiful thing. You see, normally the emphasis is going to be on, you know, the more holy situation is more holy. But no, not in this discourse by the Rebbe. Val zenaman, about this it says, the people who are outside the tent of Torah, emtza archa b'chutz, I will find you outside. Dafka. Particularly outside, the business person who's not in the yeshiva, not in the study hall, and is busy, struggling, trying to work in one way or the other. Sigazun. They are met by the divine in this way. The gam ba'alei asakim ha'nimtzaim b'chutz, that also the business people who are outside, shehem yotzim el ha'chutz, they go outside. That's how they do business. Hinei gam ba'hem tzarich liot emtza acha. They also have to discover this. I will find you, God. They also have this divine intimacy. The avshenim tzaim b'chutz, that even though they're outside, velachin tzarich liot etzlam inyan shel chipus. Since they're outside, they have to search. It's not obvious, because what's in front of their eyes are practicalities, things to do with money, things to do with the goods that they're selling. Whereas the person who's studying Torah in the tent of Torah, the thing that he has in front of him is a page of Torah. And so it's redolent with godliness. But if one is outside that world, and one is in a realm of business and of business activity, there has to be a quest. And nonetheless, the afal pichein habakashahi, the request is shiyeh emtza'acha b'chutz, that indeed we should achieve to find God there in that outer realm. Shigam sham yimtzu et HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that also there, out there, they should find the Holy One. V'adalaba. And in fact, it's even more. Al zenema eshakcha dafka. That's where it says, I will kiss you to God. The dafka be'ela nimtzeim b'chutz, dafka those who are outside, sheim ba'le asakim, the business people, umarei uvdin tavin, the people who do good deeds, yeshna itkashrut be'elokut, they have a bond to God, bevchinat neshikin dafka, with the quality of kisses, shelamayla milimud ha'torah, which is even higher than the study of Torah. It's an amazing statement. It's actually very rare to find this kind of statement, even in Chabad Chassidus, which looks at every situation in the most positive and most spiritual way, to find this statement here, that business itself achieves a greater intimacy with the divine than study of Torah. That's a very remarkable and very rare statement. Ki limud ha-Torah, because the learning of Torah, Torah shebiktav, Torah shebapeh, the written Torah and the oral Torah, kashur im otiyot ha-dibur, is connected with words. Like you read the words. You read the words of the Torah, you read the words of the Mishnah, of the Talmud, and of the Code of Law. Like two people talking. Right? The lovers are talking. So that's very wonderful. They're sharing ideas. That's a very spiritual, intimate moment. But even more, whereas the radiance which shines, the ba'alei asakim, for the business people, it's like something more than words. It's like the love which comes in a way of a kiss, machmat pnimiyut ha'ava. And the reason for the kiss is because it is saying something that words cannot say, like when a parent kisses a child. They're saying something that words themselves cannot say, how much they love that child. and it comes from the inwardness of the love shebelev in the heart. She'eina miklabeshet b'shum kelim ba'otiyot. And that love is too powerful to be clothed and limited by vessels and letters and words. And so therefore it is expressed in a way of the Shikin, of a radiance, of something very beautiful coming from God to the person, because that person is there in a apparently lonely and difficult situation of being working at business. And nonetheless, that situation of being there outside in the business world is also an opportunity for connection with the divine. Now then, in brackets, it's as if he resorts to the conventional Chabad wisdom that learning Torah is an ecstatic intimacy with God and nothing can compare to it. So then in the brackets at the end, it refers back to what it says in Tanya about Hagam Shebechlalot, even though in general, Yesh Prinat It Dabkut, there is a cleaving of Rucha B'Rucha, of spirit to spirit, Bevchinat Neshikin, of kissing, Gam B'Limut HaTorah, also with learning Torah, K'mavu B'Tanya, as it says in Tanya, near the beginning of Tanya, chapter 45 it brings here, and 46, and also elsewhere in Tanya. So at the end of this paragraph, he reminds us about the normal idea. He reminds us about the normal idea that learning Torah is the most incredible infinite bond with God. But what he's told us in the main part of the paragraph is that business activities also have a tremendous spiritual force within them. And it's interesting, he doesn't actually spell it out in which way. I mean, in Tanya and in other places, he talks about the way a person might give tzedakah from their business activities. Or elsewhere, it says how a person sees divine providence in business activities. Just the very moment that one has a certain kind of goods which needs to be sold, at that moment the right person walks into the shop and the right phone call, it's some kind of sense of contact with the spiritual, which is very mysterious.
Yeah, it's even more than remarkable, because the comment of the Gemara from Mishachora Beis Hamikdash, Ein Ala Kodesh Baruch Hu Ela Dalad Amos Shal Alocha, Dalad Amos just means, you know, as I understand it, it says in Shabbos that when a person's walking along in the street, the four Amos around him, if he sees something in the street, the four Amos a certain distance is Kona.
Right.
So it's got to be very, very close to him. So the Gemara seems to be saying that since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the only way to get in touch with God, if you like, is through this little area.
Right.
Of Halacha. Just this little four amos. And we're turning the whole thing completely round.
Mm.
With the, you know, with the help of the Shir HaShirim, admittedly. That seems to be saying the opposite of what the Gemara says.
Yeah, so
the Gemara doesn't just say Halacha, it says just that little.
Well, you see, that's the interesting thing. That the Dalad Amos of Halacha in the Gemara applies to every single situation in life. You could be, you know, what does the Gemara start off with? Okay, it starts off with brachos, with saying the Shema. But then it goes on to all kinds of rules and laws about planting seeds and, you know, running a whole agricultural thing. Then you have concepts to do with finding articles in the street. Then you have damages, like negative things happening. And the halakha is there as well. You know, so if one man's ox damages another person's ox, you would think this is, you know, a bad accident, should have looked after it, shouldn't have gone. But it's covered by the halakha. The illumination of the four cubits of halakha, which you're right, it looks like a little arrow, a little narrow beam, but that beam is like a searchlight which is illuminating the whole of existence, that everything in life comes under the gaze of that beam. You know, so there is nothing in life which is excluded from the area of halakha, whatever it is. And sometimes, even in the worst situations, you have the halachic dimension, which is the way that that situation can be, so to speak, redeemed.
Yeah.
Like when the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, was he was arrested in 1927 because he was conducting a whole structure of teaching Torah around Russia in the time of the Yevsektsia, the Jewish section of the Communist Party, after the Bolshevik Revolution, when they were trying to destroy any kind of religious feeling, and particularly Jewish religious feeling, because there were so many Jewish communists, so they were very pious communists, mm-hmm. and dedicated communists. They wanted to make sure that Jewish religious feeling would be got rid of, at least, unfortunately. So they put him in prison. He was running secret Chadorim and all over Russia. And when they put him in prison, they put him in a stall, in an animal stall. And he said, this building does not need to have a mezuzah. Like he applied because it's for animal. He applied a halachic category to it. And in that sense, as it were, captured it into the four cubits of halacha. You know, so even the worst...
I think he just had a really good sense of humor.
Well... maybe that's part of halacha. Ibdu et Hashem b'simcha. We should serve God with joy. So, but you're quite right. I mean, it is a very striking teaching, because it suddenly, you know, I've been writing about postmodernity all day. So, you know, it deconstructs the barrier there's a barrier which is the division between, on the one hand, the holy, and on the other hand, the unholy. So this barrier is somehow dissolved, is deconstructed, and so what we have is that in everything there is holiness, this vision of holiness in everything.
And he's bringing up Yisoka and Zebulun, and most people would say, well, even though one's doing the work, since he's supporting people who are learning, that's why it's got some holiness. But he's not even saying that. He's just saying work. Even saying that.
You see, one of the things, one of the elements of early Hasidism was by using concepts such as Gilgul Neshamot and the spiritual underlying reality of existence, a person could feel that by the fact that he has to travel to a certain place and buy certain goods and bring them back somewhere else, so he bought them in place A and now he sells them in place B, that what's really taking place is a spiritual transaction. It's all something to do with sacred sparks and spiritual dimensions, and why his soul particularly has to be there in the world at this moment and going to a particular place, and there are special yichudim and spiritual bondings and connections that have to happen. And so everything that he's doing is really something spiritual. Now, how you do that and make a nice violin at the same time while you're thinking about all the, or a loaf of bread, you know, while you're thinking about all the spiritual dimensions which are there. But that's part of it. That is part of it. And that awareness that we're in a kind of spiritual continuum. And one thing one could perhaps say is that in business there are challenges of halakha. Is it kosher? Should it be done? Is this right? Is that right? How to do it? And that is the meeting with the divine, you know, facing that challenge in a healthy way, is itself the meeting with the divine. See, the person sitting studying Talmud, there's no challenge. You know, there's the challenge of learning another bit, learning another page, learning in a more deep way, understanding not only this Tosfos, but that, because Tosfos refers to something in another piece of Gemara. So, first of all, understanding this Tosfos, and then turning to the other Gemara and understanding that. You know, there is a challenge on that level. But in most other respects, the person is not challenged. Whereas doing business, one is being challenged all the time in all kinds of different ways. And, you know, there are moral challenges, spiritual challenges. And the facing of those challenges, that's the meeting with the divine. That's the connection with God. Okay. Now, Vihine, so on page 578. Vihine nosaf aleinyin haklali. In addition to the general idea that Ashrat HaShchina B'Mikdash Haya B'Aron, that the indwelling of the Divine Presence in the Temple was there at the Ark, Mavur B'Amayim HaShem, it explains in that discourse in Torah Or, Shahashra Zuk Shura, that this indwelling of God is connected in Minyan HaKruvim with the two cherubs, She'al HaKaporet, which are on the cover of the Ark. And that's why it says like a brother to me, because that's like the two kruvim, like brother and sister. Dehine, because be'inyan akruvim, as regards the kruvim, amru razal, the sages said in the Talmud, in Chagiga, it says in the note, haynu p'nei kruv, haynu p'nei adam. What's the difference between the kruv and a person? They are like faces. They're like figurines. V'tirtzu ape rav ravi v'ape zutri. It explains the idea of larger faces and smaller faces. In other words, it's like two, as it were, child figurines. One male, one female. Umavaj bezeh shaman, and explains that the inyana pirav ravi, the large face, all this relates to the Kabbalistic concept of zeh ampin and arich ampin. It comes out of this page of Gemara. Chagiga is a very mystical section of the Talmud, because in Chagiga you have the four people who entered Pardes and telling us not to study Kabbalah, so... That's or the dangers of studying Kabbalah. So in that same place we have what seems to be the Talmudic parallel to the Kabbalistic concept of Zer Ampin and Arich Ampin. So it explains that the Apir Ravrabi, the face of the man, so to speak, the larger face, Pnei Adam hu inyan haTorah shelamayla, that means the Torah which is above. And that's the Rebbe says, "V'yesh lomar," and one can suggest, "Shelamayla mizeh, higher than that, uprinat arich ampin." Ah, in fact, arich ampin is on a higher level, which is keter, and then you have the apir rav ravi, and then you have the apir zutri, the larger face, the smaller face. We're talking here about a chain of different levels from which the infinite comes down finally into our finite world. The inyan apizutri, in the small face, which the Rebbe translates into the Lurianic term ze'er ampin, he, the small face, he am shachata Torah, is the drawing of the Torah, yedea kruvim lemata, through the kruvim below. So in other words, the image of the Mishkan and the kruvim represent a channeling of Torah energy from a very exalted realm above into our physical world. And there are two cherubs, and there is the cover of the ark. As explained there, also in a manuscript of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, that the editor of Torah Or had in front of him, and so therefore there's a part of this chapter in Torah Or which is copied out of a manuscript, and it's put in big letters because it's from a manuscript of Rabbi Shneur Zalman Ba'atzmo. The inyan Beit HaKruvim, these two cherubs, Dichtibuhu Kruv Echad Mikatsu Mizeh, it says one cherub on one side of the ark, and the other one Kruv Echad Mikatsu Mizeh, and another cherub the other side. Heim Sof Olamot Ein Sof Chinat Zah, they are the end of the worlds of Ein Sof Zeh Ampin Utchilat Olamot Biyah, and the beginning of the worlds, Bria Yetzira. So we have, let's see if we have the infinite above, Ein Sof. And then we have different levels, of which we have Arich Anpin, that's Keter, right? So we have the inner and the outer level of Keter. And then we have the different Sfirot, which are called Ze'er Anpin, which are basically the Sfirot. When we talk about the Sfirot, that is Ze'er Anpin, until you come to Malchut. So there's Ze'er and Nukva. And Ze'er is, so to speak, like the Zachar, like the male, and then there's the female, which is Malchut, kingship. So you have this... These Sfirot are called Ze'er Anpin, like this. You see, it relates to the Kruv, it's to the cherub which is on the up. And then you have the lower worlds, which begins again Malchut and then Keter, and you have other worlds, and you have creation, Bria, Yitzira, formation, and action. Now, so this is the other Kruv. So one cherub, one kruv is here. You see, the English word cherub is just simply the Hebrew kerub, cherub. So they write the kaf as C-H-R-U-B, cherub.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you see, it's just the Hebrew, because they have no way to translate it. What is it? So they just say the two cherubs, or cherubim, something. So there's one kruv there, and there's another kruv here. So the higher kruv is a channel, as it were, for godliness down to that level, down to from Ze'er Anpin, down here, and then from Malchut into the lower worlds, Bria Yitzira Asiya, is the second kruv. Now, we then have the Kaporet. Now that's another dimension over here. Let's just see this. Ushneim yachad, the two of them together, naasim mikshe achad, they are, the two cherubs are made of gold, but they are not made as separate pieces. It's all beaten out, mehakaporet, from the cover of the ark, shehi b'chinat keter echad v'shneim, and that b'chinat chupa. It's like a crown around both of them. Now this keter, you see here keter? That keter, which is like a crown to both the kruvim, that is the cover of the ark. Now, the only problem here in this image is that we think of the cover of the ark as being under the two cherubs, but not. It's as if we're upside down, because under the ark, under the cover, are the two tablets of which come from Mount Sinai. You know, so somehow or other, it's... You know, I'm not quite sure, but the cover is a higher dimension, and then you have the kruvim, and then you have the world. So it's as if it's upside down from inside the ark. That's like the infinite. That's where the two tablets of stone are, and this is shining out through the kruvim, and from the kruvim flowing into the world. So it's as if we have to turn the whole picture upside down. It's not in the normal way of reading it. I don't know about that. You know, someone could put me right. So there we have the chupa. So the cover of the ark is the chupa, is the cover. V'hainu sheshneim nimshachim mebchinat hakaporet. Both of these dimensions come from the cover. V'haketer, and the crown, sholamayle me'ashulchan, which is above the ark. Shesham haita ashrat hashchina, and there was the indwelling of the Shechina. V'zeo inyan mi yiten chakaachli. That's what it means. Who will make you like my brother? Your next day, imi drinking from my mother. Emtzaacha b'chutz eshakcha. I will find you outside. I'll kiss you. Aviyachel beit imi. I'll bring you into my mother's house. The tochen abakasha de Knesset Yisrael laKadosh Baruch Hu. The request, the plea of the Jewish people to God, bizman galut, at the time of exile, hu sheyiye yiten chakaach, that he should be like the brother, which means gilui elokut shebakruvim, the revelation of the divine that is in the kruvim, v'hainu sheyum shoch ba'avodat yoshvei oel, that they should be drawn down into the service of the dwellers of the tent, the Torah scholars, ubalei asakim, and the business people, gilu elokut, the divine revelation, shahaya bebeit hakruvim, which was in the two kruvim. So we could imagine that somehow or other these two kruvim seemingly, it doesn't actually say it quite in those words, but it's as if, well, let's just, that there is this flowing down, and that flows down seemingly equal into the Torah scholars and the business people. We all drink in this flow of godliness flowing down the whole system. And then it presents another way of understanding this verse. But before we leave the first way, the first way, it's like a plea, it's a longing to see the divine, to experience the divine in our daily lives, whether it's as Torah study or whether it's as business. In every aspect of life there should be that recognition of the divine. Now the second way of reading it, which is in the next paragraph, is not that it's a request, it's that it's a factual statement. That's what's happening. V'yesh lomar od, and there's another way of saying it, the peirush pasuk zeh, that the explanation of this verse, eino rak lashon bakasha, it's not only as a request. Eila ma shekatuv mi yitencha, these words, if only, mi yitencha, which are like a request, yesh lufar shobani chuta, can be explained not as a request, but as a statement. The word nichuta here is a phrase used in the Talmud when it's discussing whether a particular phrase is a question or not a question. So not a question means b'nichuta. Shemibchinat mi, from the quality mi. Now mi, who, is like an exalted, is an exalted level of godliness. And so what it's saying, from that level of mi, of who, Yum Shech Inyan Shel Achazeh, could come down that further level below, Shiyek Achli, that me should become like my brother. In other words, a very exalted level of the divine should become close to me and intimate with me like my brother. The woman says, V'al derech ha-mavua b'lukutei Torah b'binba, as it says in Likutei Torah in Bamidba, b'perush ha-pasuk, explaining the verse, Mi yiten v'haya levavam ze lahem lira'oti. If only their hearts would always be like this to fear me. And there's another explanation of this verse. Mi yiten, the quality me will give, that they will fear me. V'prinet mi, hu ein sof baruch hu, the infinite, hasovev kol almin, surrounding all worlds, she'enu musag klal, beyond any kind of grasp. Hu yiten, he will give, that their hearts will be liraoti, that they will fear me. So in other words, instead of it being a plea for something which isn't happening now, it's a statement of something that is happening now. It is happening. Dal derech zeh gam b'pasuk zeh, and in the same way with this verse, mi yitencha ka'achli, me, in the infinite, will make you like my brother. שמבחינת מי יומשך שיהיה ייתן לך את האחרית. From that infinite quality will be that you are my brother now. And I do find you outside. And we do kiss in the street. ועוד זאת and further, ועניין ייתן לך מלשון נתינה, the idea of giving, make. In Hebrew it says yiten, which is like give. When we translate into English, if only who would make you like my brother. But this moreh al hamshacha na'alit biyoter, it's something even higher. Kamayma kolan noten ba'ayin yafa hu noten. Anyone who gives a present, he gives in a generous way. It's some kind of extra sense of giving and revelation and flow from an exalted spiritual level. And then there's another point. The Masha Katuv Li, the idea, Li, me. Now there's a thing it says in the Midrash, that when it says me, Moreh Sham Shacha Zu Hi Nitzchit, it means something eternal. The word Li, the Midrash takes as a clue to the idea of something being perpetual and eternal. It's always coming to me. And so, missing the brackets, K'maymer Azal, Kol Makom Shenema Li, Eino Zaz L'Olam. Wherever it says to me, it's something which is never dislodged. V'yesh Kashazeh Gamim HaPasuk, V'Pasha Tashvur, this also connects to the verse in the Sedra. V'asu Li Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Tocham, they should make for me a sanctuary and I'll dwell within them. That here too, the word li means something eternal, that it is always there. So in other words, the making of the sanctuary is an eternal thing, and the sanctuary is always there, and we are part of it. And what's happening in the sanctuary is a flow of godliness from above to below. And it could seem to us in the time of exile that we don't have this flow, and we long for it. But then there's another way of looking at the verse, that it's not absent, it's there now. And we're part of it. And we are bathed in that radiance. And according to all this, to Yuvan Tochen Klalut Adam, Ovadat Adam Bezman HaGalud, we can understand the service of a person at the time of exile. Bezman HaGalud Bechlalud, because in general, what is exile? Hu Inyanim Tza'ach Bachutz. Exile means finding God outside, not inside, outside. Shenimtzayim Yisrael mechutz limkomam. The Jewish people are outside their place. They're supposed to be in Israel. They're not there. They're supposed to be with the temple. They're not there. Ubezeh gufa, and in this itself, yesh beit afonei avodah. There are two approaches to service. Inyan limud haTorah, study of Torah, mare Torah, masters of Torah. Bchinat ka'achli shebachutz, like the brother which is outside. Ve'inyan uvdin tavin, and good deeds. Bchinat chutz shebachutz, which is the outside of the outside. So even when we're learning Torah, because it's exile, we're outside. But when we're talking about business, we're in the outside of the outside. Ubechlalut im bchinat yisachar zulun, and these two levels of just being outside, and then the outside of the outside, are Yisachar and Zvulun. The Tachlid HaShlemut B'zeh, the real goal is, Inyanim Tza'ach HaBachutz, is to be outside, and to find God outside. As if, being a business person, and going about one's daily work with figures and a computer and making things and selling things and being a craftsman, all these different things. If we find God in that procedure, there's something immense that we're achieving. Because that is being on the outside and finding that godliness on the outside. Because it's only outside that we get that intimacy. He comes back to this theme that he presented before, that in business there's a greater intimacy than in Torah in some way. And so here he's saying it again, that because business is outside, the outside of the outside, and it's only outside where it's speaking about this intimacy of neshika, of kissing. Ochnoda, as is known, the tachlit chokhma, the purpose of all wisdom, which is Torah study, is tshuva masim tovim, is repentance and good deeds. In other words, Torah study is not just Torah study. Torah study leads to good deeds in the world around us. V'zeu inyan avodat zman hazeh, and that is the idea of the service of God at this time. Hafatzat hamayonot chutza, the spreading of the fountains to the outside, chutz adaita, particularly to the outside. Shia im tza'ach v'chutz, so that I find you outside. Ulushom mamshichim et hamayonot atzman, and to the outside we draw the fountains themselves. V'inyan ze mevi, and through this we achieve, shia v'asui migdash v'shechanti b'tocham, that we make for God a sanctuary, and God dwells in it, in us. Bigula amitad vashima, in the true redemption of the day Mashiach Tzidkenu through Mashiach. Kashe kahal gadol yeshuvu hina, when a great congregation will come back to him. Kahal gadol kolel kol afunei avada, when it says a great congregation, it means every different style of service of God. Yisachar, Zulun, Yehuda v'Yosef, those are all different styles. Ma'aseh v'Talmud, action and Torah study. And that will really be the completion of making a temple for me. Last page. Kol makom shenema li enuzaz olam, and whenever it says li, it's forever. Ki az yamikdash hanitzri, then it will be the third temple. Then it will be the eternal temple. Mikdash ad nikon in yudecho, the temple which God's hand has established. Beguda nitzrit, in the eternal redemption, she'enach re'agalot, which will not be followed by exile. V'noma lafanaven, will say before God, shir chadash l'shon zechah davka, we will say a new song expressed in the male, because it will be something so exalted. V'tiyaz Torah chadasha, then will be a new Torah, v'shamayim ba'eretz chadashim, and a new heaven and a new earth, b'gula amitit v'shema, in the true and complete redemption. Oy yam bam ba yadam ba ya yo yam ba yam ba ram ba yam ba yam ba yo bam bam ba yam ba rum bam bam ham bam bam ba yo yam ba yo yam bam bam ba yam ba yo da da. Om ba bam ba.